It's Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brings together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. With today's guests and the topic for Encounter, here is Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the number two Republican in the House of Representatives loses his seat to a little-known Tea Party challenger. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In a stunning upset, a Tea Party-backed challenger defeated Congressman Eric Cantor, the second-ranking Republican in the House of Representatives, in a primary election last week, which is sure to reshape Republican policy and leadership henceforth. Mr. Cantor, who was considered the leading candidate to be the next Speaker of the House, the top job in that legislative chamber, which is currently controlled by the Republicans, lost to David Bratt, a college economics professor, by a substantial margin, 56% to 45%. Cantor said he would be stepping down as majority leader at the end of July, and Republicans have already elected his successor, Kevin McCarthy, a Republican from California. The defeat of Mr. Cantor defied the prevailing wisdom that Republican Party leaders and allied business groups had crushed the Tea Party wing, which has fought to push the party further to the political right. Analysts say that Cantor's defeat could reshape many areas of policy in Congress, foremost among them the prospects for immigration reform. But many Republican leaders are saying they will not make gains with the fast-growing Hispanic population unless it helps to liberalize immigration laws and grant legal status to some illegal immigrants. Tea Party Republicans have characterized such moves as tantamount to amnesty and are fervently opposed to such reforms. Cantor's departure could also change President Barack Obama's calculations in how to work with Congress and whether there are hopes for building on the small bit of bipartisanship that remains after recent cooperation on budget matters. Well, with us to discuss the significance and implications of what has been dubbed a political earthquake and also to preview midterm elections in November are two veteran political analysts. John Fortier is a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center. He's also a regular columnist for the Politico newspaper. And Igor Volsky, he's managing editor of thinkprogress.org, a progressive political blog affiliated with the Center for American Progress. That's a Washington-based think tank with close ties to the Obama administration. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Carol.
John Fortier, let me begin with you. Political earthquake, tsunami, how do you characterize the defeat of Eric Cantor, the number two Republican in a primary election? How do you see it?
Well, first, this really came out of nowhere. There are people in Washington telling you that they predicted this. I wouldn't trust them because this was not really on most people's radar screen. It is true that the issue of populist Republicanism or Tea Party and the challenge to the establishment has been here with us for several years, and there were a number of other races that people were watching. And the narrative really had been, boy, the Tea Party wasn't succeeding. The establishment had come back, had funded strong incumbents, had funded strong candidates, that endangered incumbents really took these challenges seriously. But this was one where nobody was really saying that Eric Cantor really should have been watching out for this. And all of a sudden on election night, he lost by a significant margin, by over 10 percentage points. So I think it's still evidence that the Republican Party has a populist part to it. It's not always happy with the establishment. And I do think it also is a case where in many of these other races we're talking about, there was preparation, there was expectation of a fight, and those incumbents really worked hard to fend off the challenges. Here, it seemed that Eric Cantor had a seat which he wasn't really worried about until almost it was too late, to the last couple weeks of the campaign, where David Bratt, really an outsider, gained some traction. And frankly, while he is a Tea Party person in many ways and more populist, he wasn't really supported by the Tea Party organizations. He was sort of off their radar screen, too, as not the most likely candidate to win against Eric Cantor until the very last minute when some national figures came into the race.
Turning to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on this so-called earthquake, how do you think it happened and why is it so significant?
Well, I think it's significant because Eric Cantor spent a lot of time trying to court the Tea Party during the Tea Party wave of 2010, when you had a lot of these conservative freshman lawmakers come in. He took them under their wing and really represented their voice in leadership much more so than Speaker Boehner and some of the others. And so the fact that just years later he would be pushed out is very surprising. But there were some early signs that he was having problems in his district. He spent very little time there. He devoted a lot of his resources to traveling around the country, helping elect other Republicans. And there was an election earlier in January where some of his hand-picked party leaders were pushed out and other Tea Party folks came in. And there was really an energy around someone like David Bratt, who felt that Eric Cantor was simply out of touch. They pointed to certain positions on immigration, his willingness to fund parts of Obamacare as part of larger budget deals, to say, hey, look, this guy isn't conservative enough. But I think it's also important not to overstate the implication of this election. I think ultimately, policy-wise, very little changes. And very few people voted in this election. In his district, very few registered Republicans voted. And so it's not as if I don't think there's this great Tea Party wave. It's just the combination of different factors really created this very improbable situation.
Very good point. Back to you, John Fortier. Even though Igor says policy-wise, very little may change, nonetheless, this is a pretty serious event for Republicans. Talk about the ripple effects for the party, given that Cantor was in line for the top job in the House of Representatives to succeed Speaker John Boehner.
Well, first, I'll agree with Igor that we might have looked at Eric Cantor 4 years ago as someone who really represented the Tea Party and was a challenger to John Boehner. Over that time, he's evolved in a way that has made him much more of a lieutenant to John Boehner and the successor and part of the establishment. That actually was part of his problem in the election. So I don't think that there would have been a dramatic change in the movement from Eric Cantor of today, from John Boehner to Eric Cantor. I do think one issue people point to is immigration. And I think partly we're pointing to it after the fact. Nobody was paying attention to this race while David Bratt and others were raising the issue. Eric Cantor wasn't the most obviously pro-immigration person in the world. He was talking about a potential deal quietly, as some of the other leaders were, and there was some pushback against him. So I do think it will be read in part as making immigration a harder sell for this Congress. I will say it was a difficult sell anyway. The theory of getting immigration reform through this Congress really relied on the fact that somehow Republicans would get past their primaries, there would be a small window in the summer where they might be able to deal with that issue as more of an establishment matter, and maybe it would be passed later in the year. That's not dead, but that was always a hard sell, and probably this race has made it a little harder. It's emboldened some of the critics of immigration. But again, I don't think it was the case that this was a done deal that it was going to happen. It's more that it's become even harder to get something done that some of the Republican leadership would like to.
We'll pursue the issue of immigration in a minute. And of course, we know that in the long run, if Republicans continue to oppose immigration reform, it's only going to hurt their electoral chances with large sectors of the U.S. population, Hispanics. But that's something we'll talk about in a minute. But one more question for you, John Fortier. What does this do to the Republican Party, Cantor's defeat? Is there now a shift in the direction of the Tea Party? Will so-called pragmatists have to hunker down a bit? I mean, how do you see it affecting the GOP?
Well, one interesting point is that as soon as Eric Cantor lost that primary, there was the thought that there was room for a strong Tea Party or more conservative figure in the House leadership. And he was the majority leader, the second position in the House. And the thought was that some of the more conservative Tea Party members would challenge for that position, for the number two position, to be the successor to John Boehner as Speaker. They decided not to. Kevin McCarthy, the number three person, who's more of an establishment Republican from California, has won the election to ascend to that position. But it did not signal the end of the establishment among Republicans. You still have, interestingly enough, several figures who are on the conservative side, but certainly within the party, not the most conservative, and not from the South. Speaker from Ohio, now a majority leader from California. You've got someone from Washington State in the leadership. These are not the most conservative members and the most conservative states that the Republican Party represents. So I think you've seen not as much of a reaction, at least initially, in that Tea Party Republicans in Congress didn't quickly rushed to fill that position that Eric Cantor had left. We filled it with a more establishment Republican, Kevin McCarthy.
Turning to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on any ripple effect the defeat of Eric Cantor will have for the Republican Party and your take on the new majority leader, his replacement, Kevin McCarthy, and to what extent you think the Republican Party is going more in this Tea Party, this more conservative direction, as a result of the election of David Brat.
Well, part of the reason why John says that the immigration reform hasn't completely been pushed off the table is precisely because Kevin McCarthy is from a district in California that is filled with agricultural workers, with farm workers. Every single other person who represents areas around his district supports immigration reform, comprehensive immigration reform, and he's really been at the ground zero for activism on this issue. Immigration advocates have tried to push him. They've held sit-ins and sleep-ins in his office, trying to get him on the record to commit to moving the Senate bill that passed through the House or some kind of piece-by-piece legislation, but ultimately getting it done. And I think this indication that now he's the number two and not some of the other Tea Party members really signals that Republicans understand that on a macro level, if they want to win national elections in 2016, they're going to have to bring the Hispanic vote in, they're going to have to bring women in, and that means they're going to have to embrace some of these policies, they're going to have to compromise on immigration. And so maybe it won't happen now, because politically it's very difficult after the Cantor defeat for House Republicans to line up behind an immigration bill. But somewhere in the future, the fact that someone like McCarthy is in power and given the makeup of his district, I think then there's hope for moving forward on this issue.
We'll have more in just a moment. But first, you're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are John Fortier. He's a political scientist and director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Igor Volsky, from whom you just heard. He's managing editor of thinkprogress.org at the Center for American Progress. And we're talking about the U.S. political landscape after a top-ranking Republican lost his primary election to a little-known Tea Party candidate. This is a reminder that you can listen to Encounter online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/encounter, and please send us an email with your feedback to encounter@voanews.com. Well, back to you, John Fortier. Let's take a look at implications for the Democrats. Do you see any positives or negatives as a result of Cantor's defeat? Are they gloating over his defeat, or does it look even less likely that compromise is possible given a very conservative Tea Party candidate was elected instead? How do you see it?
I think there's not that much effect on Democrats. I mean, certainly some of them are happy to raise the issue of some parts of the Republican Party being too conservative for America. I think there's some sense that it's going to be even harder to do things going forward as we get closer to the election, not necessarily the one election of David Brat winning the primary, but really just that the window is closing before the general election, and there's not much time to do things politically. But I do think the larger landscape for Democrats is still, this is a midterm election where the president is not particularly popular. The president has had some problems recently. His numbers are down a little bit, and they've been down certainly over the course of his second term. And that there are a number of senators, especially, sitting in vulnerable seats, sitting in very Republican seats, who could be overturned or open seats that Republicans could win. So the fate of the Senate, whether Republicans capture that or not, and even the possibility of Republicans gaining a few more seats in the House, is something that Democrats have to watch for. So I'm not sure they're more optimistic because of this defeat here. If it were a widespread phenomenon that Republicans are likely to keep that seat, this Tea Party person is not likely to lose to a Democrat. So if Republicans aren't shooting themselves in the foot in seats where they're going to lose ultimately in the fall, I think they still have a pretty good landscape to build on for the 2014 election.
What about the likelihood that they may be able to take over the Senate?
I think there's a good possibility they will take over the Senate. It's a long or a heavy lift in one way, in that they require 6 seats to get there. And 6 seats is a lot of Senate seats in one election. But they have a number of Democrats either in open seats that are very Republican-leaning states, places like Montana and West Virginia. Also, you have South Dakota, but you also have incumbents, people sitting in seats in Alaska and Arkansas and Louisiana. These are all incredibly Republican-leaning seats. And yes, they'd have to win the vast majority of those seats to win, but right now, the possibility is there. I'd say it's at least 50-50 that Republicans can take the Senate as of today. And that's not by much. They would only have a small majority, and they're very likely to keep their House majority. So good possibility for Republicans is they'll have more seats. Whether they take the Senate or not, they'll have a stronger position going into the last 2 years of the Obama administration. And I think that's something that hasn't really changed because of this election.
Back to you, Igor Volsky. Regarding implications of Cantor's defeat and changes in the Republican Party for Democrats. Are Democrats gloating over this, or have things not changed that much? And given President Obama's relatively lackluster poll ratings, they may be in for some trouble, particularly as we come up on the midterm elections.
Yeah, I agree with John. I don't think Democrats are jumping up for joy over this or really looking at it as an indicator of things to come. And certainly, of course, things can change very quickly. You know, last time we spoke, we all thought the 2014 elections were going to be about Obamacare and how that's going to play out. Now Iraq is center stage. I mean, these issues just come and go, and you don't know what's going to be the major issue once you get closer to November. Certainly, I think Democrats are looking at some of the poll numbers that Obama has been posting, and they're not very confidence building. Few Americans trust the job that the president's doing on the domestic front, on the foreign front. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Democrats position themselves in relation to the president and how the president can help Democrats drag some of those vulnerable Democrats across the finish line. They, for a long time, have really developed this populist agenda, talking about the minimum wage, increasing it, equal pay for equal work between women and men, pay equity, whole college tuition, a whole host of issues that they kind of package together for this middle class empowerment agenda. And whether or not that's going to be enough to make sure they keep the Senate and don't lose too many seats in the House, it will have to be seen.
I would like to take issue with something you just said, though, Igor. Even though President Obama's polls are dwindling, on domestic issues, the electorate is rather favorable toward President Obama, whether it's on climate change initiatives, education, immigration, at least the numbers I've read.
Certainly, if you ask voters, do you believe in climate change? Do you think the government should do more to reduce the effects of climate change? Yes, Americans agree with those broad policies. Do you want comprehensive immigration reform with a path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants? The overwhelming majority of Americans agree. Do you want background checks? 82% of Republicans want background checks. They just don't think at this point that Obama is the man to push those policies forward.
Indeed. Well, there is a question about his leadership, no question, John Fortier, whether it's on the domestic side with the economy plugging away, but perhaps not doing as well as it should, but particularly on the foreign policy front. Now we're confronting this crisis in Iraq. Many Republicans have criticized President Obama, saying that he should have negotiated a status of forces agreement with Prime Minister Maliki a couple of years ago. Of course, Democrats say, well, look, he tried and he failed. It wasn't his fault. It wasn't the U.S. fault. But nonetheless, he is coming in for considerable criticism for his leadership or lack thereof on foreign policy. How would you characterize President Obama in this regard, and how much of a drain or rather a drag will this be for the Democrats as we look toward the midterm elections?
Well, it's interesting. I do think, of course, we've had many momentous foreign policy issues on the table, and many of them kind of cutting against the president in the last few months. It's a switch from the first term. In the first term, the president certainly had some lower numbers on some economic issues and how he's handling some domestic issues, but his numbers on foreign policy always tended to be higher. He had some Republican support. His agenda, I'd say, was sort of a mix, and some issues that did appeal to some Republicans, had some successes to appeal to. That's really changed. Now, I'm not sure the American people are going to focus this election on foreign policy issues. It may not be the most important set of issues for them, even with all that's going on, but it's a drag on the president. The president is seen, as many second-term presidents are, as somewhat lackluster, not sure if he can act. Things aren't going well for him. So it contributes to the narrative that this is a president who isn't doing that well, even though I think the country's sort of conflicted about what to do about foreign policy issues. They think it's not going very well. So I think the president's not in the position that George W. Bush was in late in his presidency, where only 30%, very low percentage of people approved of the job he was doing. But he's in the low 40% range, somewhere in 42, maybe up to 44 in some places, where that's going to be a drag on the Democratic ticket. Maybe not a disastrous drag, but a drag
partly caused by foreign policy, but mostly caused by just a number of things that the American people feel like they're not completely happy with the direction of the president this time. Healthcare, which we talked about last time, is a big issue for Republicans. That's still general as a large matter. The whole healthcare bill is still sort of generally a small negative for Democrats. They're proud of the accomplishment, but Republicans and independents have still some real concerns about that. So it's not one issue, but I think it's a series of issues that the American people are saying that, you know, the president isn't really as popular, or we don't have as much confidence in him as we had in the first term.
Igor Volsky, President Obama is not on the ticket, of course, in the midterm elections, but many Democrats are. How do you see his performance on foreign policy affecting their fortunes?
Well, I think it could certainly play a role, and he's in a tough spot when it comes to Iraq, particularly because if you listen to the plan he has laid out of how he's going to move forward, it doesn't sound very different from what his harshest critics would recommend, people like John McCain or some of the others in the House who lead on foreign policy issues. Yet he is still seen and is being criticized as this ineffective president who couldn't put together a status of forces agreement and pulled out American troops too soon. I mean, on one hand, this is, I think, an unfair critique of the president, but it's also, I think, a critique that is very D.C.-based. I think generally, when we kind of step back outside of the minute-by-minute political debate, the mood of the country is they don't want another conflict in the Middle East. They don't want boots on the ground. They don't want another war. And the fact that the president very clearly says we will not be putting American boots on the ground, I think generally plays well politically in large areas of the country. And so in that regard, I don't think it's going to be a hindrance.
Yeah, but to be fair to his critics, among whom are many Democrats, nobody really is saying boots on the ground.
Well, Elpol Bremer, who has been on television lately, who was the head of provisional authority in Iraq, who has, some have said, has made many mistakes that have led to this kind of sectarian violence that we're seeing today, very prominently called for boots on the ground. Certainly Republicans call for more troops, more special forces in Iraq, perhaps than the president is comfortable with. So they also are calling for more immediate airstrikes in the country. So I would argue that they are calling for a slightly larger military footprint.
Okay, maybe the use of force or the threat of the use of force. And it's true that President Obama said this week that he's sending additional equipment and as many as 300 U.S. advisors. Of course, a lot of people said that's a slippery slope, but they are not boots on the ground per se to help the Iraqi government fight against this Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, also known as ISIL. But at any rate, back to you, John Fortier. To look at one more time the Republican Party, to get a sense of this competition between the Tea Party, the much more conservative wing of the party, and the leadership. What is the state of play in terms of the battle between the two, in your view?
Well, I still think the big picture, even though Eric Cantor has lost, is that Republicans, more establishment Republicans, have been winning, or their better candidates have been winning out in many races, and they haven't endangered a lot of congressional races. Certainly, there are different wings within the Republican Party. It's harder to define what the Tea Party is. There are plenty of establishment figures who are pretty conservative on a number of issues, but Republicans found themselves in the last few elections looking at some seats where they had a real opportunity to win, and yet they elected a candidate who was really flawed and unable to perform that way. We haven't really seen that yet, and that's something that Republicans can point to. They have a lot of opportunities. They have a number of good candidates. They haven't fallen into that trap, at least in the elections we've seen so far. So the establishment or the unity of the party, I think, is in a better state in terms of the candidates that they've picked. And again, being a midterm election where the Republicans don't have a president, they're the opposition party, they can make more of the case against the president. And that unites these wings even more. So I think they're in reasonably good shape in the election, given the tensions they have within their own party.
Well, of course, we haven't even had the midterm elections, but everybody's already talking about 2016. And that leads me to ask you about potential presidential contenders on the Republican side. Who are the possible contenders in your view? And are they going to lean more toward, you know, the so-called establishment types, moderates, to the extent there are any left, or more conservative Tea Party? Who are the front runners?
Well, there's clearly not a single front runner, as there is on the Democratic side. Hillary Clinton, who we all assume will run and will assume will be a very strong candidate and probably the front runner. On the Republican side, I think you'll see a variety of candidates, some of them really coming much more out of the populist Tea Party wing. You might see Rand Paul, a more libertarian flavor of that Tea Party, or Ted Cruz from Texas representing that wing of the party. Certainly you'll see some establishment types. There is a big question of whether Jeb Bush gets in the race. Jeb Bush would, of course, be the third Bush who might become president, and also someone who is more pro-immigration and would represent a kind of much more establishment wing of the party, a number of governors and senators as well. So I think it's a big field, and the dynamic of a multi-candidate race is not necessarily the most conservative or most moderate wins. You've seen both John McCain and Mitt Romney come out of big fields like that, and they certainly weren't the most conservative candidates in those races. So it's hard to handicap now, but there will be a wide field with quite a number of people in it.
Back to you, Igor Volsky, for your take on who you think the possible contenders for the Republican presidential candidate might be, and also, is Hillary Clinton basically, is it a foregone conclusion that she's running? She, of course, came out with her book. Is that a prelude to her presidential run? How do you see it from the Democratic point of view?
Well, I think she's certainly road testing a possible campaign. She's doing a lot of these interviews, a whole one-hour town hall recently where voters asked her questions directly. And I think she's really trying to get a sense of, is it worth it to do this all over again, to face the kind of opposition she's going to face? And I think she's going to decide, A, is there something she can contribute? B, can she win in a political environment where she's going to be succeeding a president who isn't necessarily very popular at this point, at a point where some, I think, more than 60% of Americans believe that the country's moving in the wrong direction? How can she, as a Democrat, steer the country in the right direction if her policies heavily reflect what the president has done? So I think those are questions she's going to have to answer. And certainly on the right, as John laid out, there's a lot of different people who could potentially run. I would add Chris Christie to that list, who's actively exploring a bit and believes that he's kind of gone past his scandal.
The governor of New Jersey.
The governor of New Jersey. And ultimately, though, any Republican is gonna have to do this balancing act of appealing to very conservative voters in the primary and then moving towards the middle in the general election.
Well, gentlemen, I have a feeling that we'll be back at these microphones, if not before the midterm elections in November, certainly right after, to see what the fallout will be. I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's director of the Democracy Project at the Bipartisan Policy Center here in Washington, and Igor Volsky, managing editor of thinkprogress.org at the Center for American Progress. Gentlemen, as always, thank you for your terrific insights.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Wagner Roberts. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.
Encounter on the Voice of America. Encounter on the Voice of America brought together advocates and opponents debating the critical issues of our time in a freewheeling, no-holds-barred discussion of fact and opinion. Your host was Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.